The Haines Assembly approved spending money on a helicopter noise study, and the Board of Fish meetings continue in Sitka. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. The Haynesboro Assembly on Tuesday evening narrowly approved spending a combined total of about $63,000 to study helicopter noise and evaluate the police department. The two proposed studies were amendments to a budget ordinance Tuesday night. Most of the Assembly spoke in support of spending $22,000 for an independent evaluation of the police department. So did a few members of the audience. That study was suggested by the police chief and manager. It's aimed at providing an audit of sorts of the department's policies, procedures, and practices. Here's manager David Sosa explaining.
As I discussed the situation with Chief Musser and researched the records, this hasn't really ever happened. And there's a significant liability associated with not conducting external audits of police departments, by police professionals.
But then Assemblyman Dave Barry moved to include the more contentious noise study on the same amendment. That study is designed to measure decibel levels of helicopter activity from several sites near Chilkat Lake Road. That's where the issue of helicopters and heliports has come to a head recently. After the Borough Assembly approved a permit for a private heliport at a property off Chilkat Lake Road, a resident there appealed the decision to State Superior Court. That case is ongoing, but the Assembly previously approved spending $10,000 on a helicopter noise study. Now, Borough Manager Dave Sosa estimates the study is going to cost $42,000. A few members of the audience spoke in opposition of that study, saying the borough could use that money to fund more important things in the community. Assemblyman Ron Jackson also opposed it, calling it a waste of money. He said it will provide subjective data and not help the borough solve the divisive issue of where to allow heliports in the borough.
Results of this will give objective numbers or numbers to a subjective discussion. And the question has not been asked ahead of time about what do we do with these numbers, how will we use those, will it be 50 decibels, will it be 70 decibels, all those things in between. And I see this as being, at the end, we're going to have spent this money and we will not have any better, clearer picture of how to site heliports in the borough.
Assemblywoman Diana Lapham supported the study, saying the borough needs quality and impartial data to help it address the issue.
I want to be able to base my decisions on how I vote on fact, not on hearsay from people who are against heliskiing or people that are for heliskiing. I want to base it on fact.
Sosa agreed the study is expensive, but says he hopes the borough will be able to use it to appease most of the community.
This is a lot of money to spend to move forward on a particularly thorny problem, but my hope is that we can come out of this with some legislation or with planning code that is acceptable to the community so we can move past this.
Jackson, Mike Case, and Joanne Waterman voted against including the noise study on the budget amendment. Mayor Jan Hill broke the tie by voting for it. Also Tuesday, the Assembly approved increasing water and sewer rates. They will continue to increase each year until 2018. The increase is covering operating expenses and to come into compliance with the borough's bond bank. It will also allow the borough to start saving some money for future water and sewer capital projects. There are not enough students to reopen Mosquito Lake School for the next school season. That's the consensus Friends of Mosquito Lake School and Community Center announced late last week. But the group still plans to work on strategies to open the school in the future. To help with that effort, the group has decided to apply for nonprofit status with the state. Dana Hallett is on Friends of Mosquito Lake's steering committee. He says they found that there are 16 kindergarten through 6th grade age children in the Mosquito Lake area, but only 4 of the families were willing to switch the children from attending the Haines School, Clequan School, or home school. Hallett says opening the building as a school is still the group's primary objective. They hope to work with the school board to come up with ideas to make it a more attractive option to families. In the meantime, the group is putting together a business plan to use the building as a community center. They will present the business plan to the borough with the hope that it will make it into the budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Mosquito Lake School closed last year because enrollment dropped below 10 students, disqualifying it from state funding. The borough has not allowed residents to use the building for meetings or activities because they budgeted it to maintain it at a bare minimum expense. Hallett hopes Friends of Mosquito Lake will gain nonprofit status and be able to set up an agreement with the borough to use the building as a community gathering place and eventually again as a school. Many of the players and stakeholders in Southeast Alaska's salmon and herring fisheries laid out their positions Tuesday as the Board of Fisheries opened its spring meeting to public testimony. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports on day two of the Board of Fish meeting in Sitka.
It did not take long for the central conflicts to emerge Tuesday morning as fishermen, tender operators, and subsistence users offered their views to the Board of Fish in public testimony. One ongoing dispute is between commercial and sport fishermen targeting Taku River king salmon near Juneau. Steve Merritt, a commercial salmon fisherman from Craig, thought it was premature to restrict the troll harvest of Taku River kings.
Despite what the territorial sportsmen say, there is no crisis on the Taku, and it is not rapidly declining. Consistency is important.
Juneau resident Larry Edfelt disagreed. Edfelt is with Territorial Sportsmen, a sport fishing advocacy group.
A run of only 20,000 Taku kings filtering into the Juneau area over a four-month period means the fish are so thinly dispersed there is almost no chance for an encounter with a Taku fish by a sport fisherman during March, April, May, or June.
Meanwhile, several Sitka residents spoke in favor of proposals to limit the commercial herring harvest in Sitka Sound, arguing that the population needs time to rebuild. Sitka Tribal Council member Harvey Kitka reminded the board of their constitutional mandate to conserve Alaska's fish stocks. He said Sitka Sound had become the last viable population of herring in Southeast. He urged the board to consider the tribe's several proposals to curtail commercial harvest areas and limits.
I really think in the long run this might be even good for the commercial people. I really think that they're overflooding the market and causing the price to drop drastically.
Tribal staff biologist Jessica Gill testified that herring biomass has been on the downturn since 2011, and of the six potential sacro herring fisheries in Southeast, only Sitka Sound would be open this year. Coho clan leader and tribal elder Herman Davis was concerned about this trend.
I wonder if all the scientists that are here can figure out what's going to happen when the herring is gone.
Davis said that herring populations were critical to the health of other stocks, including halibut and salmon. Tribal members reminded the board that the subsistence harvest of herring roe on hemlock was a region-wide commodity. ANB Grand Camp No. 1 Secretary Harriet Belial's testimony was more personal than scientific.
It is in your hands, and what you decide today and later, that will determine and affect many lives.
But there are many lives involved in the commercial harvest of herring, too. Petersburg resident Rod Bruce operates two tenders. He told the board that this season's weak market and possible cooperative fishery meant he didn't have a contract for Sitka Sound herring, and he suspected that none of the many other tenders had contracts either.
This has traditionally been a financial kickstart in the early spring for the tender fleet preparing for the salmon season. With fewer vessels fishing the quota, there are numerous crew members that are also without jobs. I know of one traditional processor, at least, that is staffed up for the fishery this year that's decided not to set up their freezing line, leaving dozens of people idle.
A final simmering dispute at this year's Board of Fish meeting is the allocation of hatchery runs among the various gear groups. As chum prices have climbed steadily over the past decade, trollers have seen their harvest values increase, but their overall share of the fish decline relative to the net fisheries. Haynes troller James Moore has been fishing for 40 years, but this was his first time to address the board. Moore is taking the high road.
I'm committed as ever to promoting opportunity for my fleet, to working for my gear group to come into its targeted allocation range, but not at all costs. Certainly not at the cost of a respectful, informed working relationship between user groups.
The Board of Fish is down one member after Governor Walker's nominee, Roland Maw, withdrew his name last week. Acting Chair Tom Kluberton thought Moore had the right attitude for policymaking.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to direct your attention to this empty seat up here.
Moore already sits on four industry boards. One more, he said, and my wife will kill me. The next step in the board process is to work in public committee, called the Committee of the Whole, to consolidate similar proposals. Committee work could take several days. The Board of Fish will meet daily in Sitka through March 3rd. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.